everybody, and welcome to the official WrestleMania 30 preview podcast for ProWrestlingPonderings.com. I'm your host, Kevin Ford. Joining me are my 3DT compadres. First, you also know him from Viva Chikara and Adventure Time podcast we do, Flooping the Pig, that's the name of it, Justin Houston. Justin, thanks for joining me.
Woo!
Also joining me, Matt Waters, formerly the host of the Podcast of Honor, but now he does PWG reviews for PWPonderings.com. Matt, thanks for coming on. What's going on?
Yeah, it's good. I am good, and I am the former host of a podcast. Is that going to just follow me forever until I host a new one? Or
Let's put it to rest today. We'll say nobody else can say that now. You are now just the PWG reviewer for PWPonderings.com, an occasional podcaster.
I'll do more stuff. I'll start a podcast with people on the street talking about stuff.
This sounds like a bad Jay Leno bit.
Sounds like fan to fan to me. Oh! I don't know.
By the way, bad Jay Leno bit, very redundant.
It's true, just a Jay Leno bit. Oh, man, well, we're not going to get into that. We're here to talk about some pro wrestling. As I said, WrestleMania 30 is the topic of conversation.
Jay Leno's been on wrestling. He's wrestled.
Oh, gosh, you're right. He has. Ugh. You know what? I don't know if I've ever seen those matches, now that I think about it, or match. I don't know if he was in multiple matches or not, but yes, the joys of being strictly a WWE fan as a kid.
Yeah. But there's That's one of the immediate beauties of this card. That we're going to be talking about today is there's none of that so far, none of that nonsense that usually exists on a WrestleMania card or a big wrestling show is here.
I do want to say there's going to be lots of podcasts on PW Pondings this week covering all the independent wrestling shows like Ring of Honor and the WWN Live stuff. But there's another show happening that hasn't been getting a lot of buzz because it's not taking place in New Orleans. And that's the first night of the Tag World Grand Prix 2014 tournament hosted by Wrestling Is Fun in lieu of Chikara, who is not coming back until the month after. So, guys, I figure we could talk about night one. It's taking place on Saturday, April 5th in Easton, Pennsylvania, and is technically part of the WrestleMania weekend stuff. We'll run down the card real quick. It's only five matches, but it's going to be two rounds of Block A, I guess they're calling it. And the first round matches we have on this card include the Spectral Envoy of Frightmare and Hollow Wicked against the Devastation Corporation of Max Smashmaster and Blaster McMassive. The Heartthrobs of WWE take on 3.0. The Osirian Portal battle the Colony Extreme Force, and this is the Missile Assault and an Arctic Rescue Ant version. And the Batiri take on Old Fashioned, consisting of Jervis Cottonbelly and Marion Fontaine. So, gentlemen, is there any particular match or team that sticks out to you as something that you are interested in seeing from this show? Justin.
Not particularly. I mean, as a big Chikara fan, it all looks, you know, good. Heartthrobs 3.0. could be a lot of fun. I don't know much about the tag team Old Fashioned and how they work together, since they're primarily, I don't know, exclusively outside of the immediate, you know, Chikaraverse. So it'd be nice to see what they're all about, especially against the Batiri, where we kind of know what to expect from them. It looks like a good show, good card, if not, you know, super mind blowing or anything.
Sure. Matt Waters, what do you think?
I think that I like Frightmare, and I like Hallow Wicked, and I like Amasis, and I like Ophidian, and I sometimes like 3.0.
So you're hoping, I presume, that those teams are the ones that advance in the tournament.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess the Batiri as well.
Yeah, so I would say those are safe bets. I would guess Envoy 3.0, the Portal, and the Batiri all advance. But yeah, I like Old Fashioned. I really like Marion Fontaine. He does good stuff at AAW and AIW. Those two actually teamed on the first wrestling extravaganza show, like the old-timey show that they did back in September. I have not watched it yet, though I haven't. I'm looking at it right now. But I presume those guys did really well as a team. So that should be a fun time. Also, Mr. Touchdown takes on Juan Francisco de Coronado in a singles match. I like both those guys, so that'll probably be fun. It is the first of three nights. They're going to carry on May 3rd in Norristown, Pennsylvania, with night two and the second round of the teams going on. And then night three is taking place on Saturday, May 24th in Easton, which is the night before Chikara's relaunch show. So if you're in Pennsylvania, there are some shows to check out. But now let's get into the meat and potatoes of this show, guys. WrestleMania 30, the showcase of the Immortals, blurdy, blurdy, blur. So I'll run down this card in totality, talking a little bit about each match, and we'll start from I'm going in the order that WWE.com has it from bottom to top, and that means we're going to start with the Vicky Guerrero Divas Championship Invitational, in which AJ Lee is going to defend her Divas Championship against Oksana, Alicia Fox, Brie Bella, Cameron, Emma, Eva Marie, Layla, Naomi, Natalia, Nikki Bella, Rosa Mendez, Summer Rae, and Tamina Snuka. Does anybody have a prediction who they think's gonna? Do you think AJ Lee's walking out with the belt, or do you think she's gonna lose it?
I would say she's gonna lose it. And I don't know. I guess one of the belt. Oh, there's talk of them wanting to put belts on Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan, so it'll be an extra special moment for Total Divas and all that garbage.
Yeah, a couple days before their wedding.
I think anybody but AJ Lee is winning this because she's had like she tore this division in quotes apart for like a year more. I don't know now.
You really think someone like Rosa Mendez has a better chance of being Divas champion than AJ Lee?
Yes.
Rosa Mendez, who hasn't been seen on television in months, and they randomly just drag her out for this particular.
Rosa Mendez, who when she came out on Raw, people kind of laughed a bit.
Yeah, there's like
they brought her out. You know why they brought her out? Yeah, they brought her out as the 14th diva because someone is superstitious and didn't want a 13th diva match. That's it.
Yeah, fair enough.
True. I just think, you know, that the time has come for someone else to try and save whatever this is supposed to be. And I don't know, at one point there was heavy talk that Naomi was going to win the belt and Nikki Bella and everyone.
If memory serves correctly, I believe Meltzer, someone said that the match was supposed to be AJ Lee versus Naomi. And then when Oksana kneed her eye socket and destroyed everything, then that all kind of went to hell. I think they were waiting to see if that was going to happen. See, I thought for the longest time with everybody beating her, it was going to be like a Natalia, Nikki Bella, Naomi four-way. And then they just said, nope, have all the divas. And I said, all right, well, I guess that's generous. You're giving so many people paychecks. But,
They do this every year. They just throw as many people on the card as they can. And no, like they did this. I swear there was a Diva Battle Royal or something one year, or a Lumberjill match?
I think it was WrestleMania 25 when they had like that Kid Rock song that introduced
it. 2007. This is the crazy thing about this match, which is why it's like evidence clearly that they treat the Divas division like a crap. The Divas title has never been defended at WrestleMania, ever. The last time a women's championship was defended at WrestleMania was 2007 between Melina and Ashley Massaro.
Ooh.
That is a gut punch. So,
and that was a great WrestleMania too, so that was just obscured amongst all the other greatness.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was the buffer that they normally do where they do big singles match, women's match, big singles match. They like to do. They're going to do it again with this match, I guarantee you.
You know, I was surprised when I remember like they do things like the Miller fight. Miller like cat fight girl per people they had, and then just like Snoop Dogg a couple years ago in Orlando, and just man, the Divas just get awful stuff for Mania typically.
Wasn't that like Team Vicky versus Team someone?
You're probably you know what, there was that. I think
it was like 26. Six on six. It was like Vicky and Lay Cool and the other bad girls against whoever. Do you know what would be cool and might save this from being inevitably bad? If Paige debuted and just sort of stared down whoever wins and held her title up and was like, yeah, I'm a women's champion, you're a Divas champion.
See, I sort of have an idea where who I'd like to win, but like an idiot, I wrote my entire secondary piece for Rub Raw this week about WrestleMania, forgetting about this podcast completely.
So you're not going to steal your own opinions? Or?
I'm going to repeat myself like many times on this show and then on the column which goes up Monday.
Rub Raw will be a nice companion piece of this podcast.
Yes, so I won't say.
Oh, just write a new column.
Who I'd like to win. That's what I really. I won't say who I'd like to win, but I like this match because we're talking about so many people that could win. We don't. No one here can say definitively who's going to win this match because they have a lot of really interesting threads set up with Brie holding the belt with Brian, with Naomi coming back from an injury, the person that we all know they wanted to put in that match anyway. Tamina set up storyline-wise to take the belt. You have veterans that probably deserve it, like Natalia, and then just like wild cards in there that they could easily just on a whim decide they want with a belt around them. And I don't think we actually know the rules yet, do we?
No, so I was about to ask if we knew because I watched WrestleMania 20 the other day and they had the Cruiserweight Title Invitational, which was several singles matches amongst all the competitors. Mm-hmm. And I am dreading that that's going to be the case for this one, too.
It's listed listed on our good friend Wikipedia as a 14 diva single fall match. So I'm guessing tornado rules. Everyone does one move and then one person wins.
So it'll basically be like a Survivor Series match. It'll be like the Survivor Series match all over again, because that was 7-on-7, I think, too, where you have all these matches where some girl will take, like, I don't know, your most basic wrestling move and get pinned, or just get rolled up or do whatever.
No, but it's single fall, so there's no pin. There's one pin. First pin wins the match.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, 14-way free-for-all.
Well, whoever's doing this Wikipedia doesn't really have a clue, unless it's someone who's in WWE doing this. So I don't know. But, so it could be what I'm saying. Hopefully it's a one-fall thing, but then that's just going to be mayhem everywhere. And, like, how is that any really different from a battle royal outside from it ending in a pinfall? You know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be stuff happening. Like, I kind of like the idea of just having doing the invitation away anyways, just so you can eliminate all the girls who don't matter and get it down to the people who do. And
who
then
doesn't matter?
Some stuff happens.
Tell me who doesn't matter. Tell me how little they matter.
Well, I mean, again, like, you have these people who they have been building stories around, so I think it's, you know, it's worthy to have, like, the Bellas, Tamina, and Naomi near the end there.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is really just fodder.
Well, my prediction is Brie, but an outside shot that might be cool would be Summer Rae, because her work in NXT was pretty good as, like, a heel, and I think she's got a bright future in the Divas division.
I think she's destined for something different with her and Fandango splitting up, so who knows?
Yeah, same here for now. I agree, though. I think she's their future kind of next breakout diva. But
for as bad as the main Divas division is, the way they've handled the ladies in NXT has actually been pretty good.
It's why there's hope, you know? It's kind of why there's a lot of people down in NXT that are being promoted now that will get little opportunities that they can maximize. And I have hope for a lot of, like, Emma and Summer Rae and even the Divas champion, AJ Lee, who I think we could all agree has a chance to walk out as champion too.
Oh, sure.
I don't think there's any chance they're going to go, what are we doing? Keep it on AJ, or realize the things I just said, where they haven't defended it ever at WrestleMania, this belt, and go, if we're going to have a diva hold the belt in the end, it's got to be AJ, right?
I don't think there's any chance. I think literally zero chance. I think it sets up, if it's single fall or whatever, it sets up, you know, this wasn't fair, I was beaten unfairly, this, that, and the other.
Classic heel
complaining.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but, you know, I hope she still has a chance to do some good singles matches, because I don't know if either of you pay attention to main event, but she had a very good match with Natalya the other week.
Yeah.
I was really impressed. So,
if she could figure out which arm she's working in a match, she'd be up there with one of the best women's wrestlers I've ever seen, honestly.
Totally, totally.
She just keeps freaking forgetting which one's which.
Yeah, it's a problem, but, you know, not one that's hard to fix. So, I guess I'll go on record, and I'll just going to say I think Naomi wins the belt here. I think they can stick with the plan. But again, a Bella winning would not shock me in the slightest. Neither would Tamina, and neither would AJ keeping the title. So there's that. And you can read Rubber Odyssey, Justin's definitive. Are you not going to do opinions or predictions for any matches here?
I'm definitely going to predict. I won't say who I want to win and why I want them to win it, but I will say that I think it's either going to be Naomi or Tamina.
Okay. All right, so moving on, we have another match with a lot of competitors, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, the first one ever. It's a 30-man Battle Royal for the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy. We currently know 26 of the 30 participants, including Alberto Del Rio, the current Intercontinental Champion, Big E, The Big Show, Brodus Clay, Christian, Cody Rhodes, Damian Sandow, Darren Young, Dolph Ziggler, Fandango, Drew McIntyre, Goldust, The Great Khali, Heath Slater, Jinder Mahal, Justin Gabriel, Kofi Kingston, Mark Henry, The Miz, Rey Mysterio, Sheamus, R-Truth, Santino Marella, Sin Cara, Titus O'Neil, and the best wrestler of all time, Zack Ryder. So yeah, this is going to be a match. It's going to be a battle royal, of course. I think, again, this is another match where I think there's definitely those five or six people on TV they've been pushing hard as potential winners. I don't know. Like, part of me thinks, like, you know, it makes sense for Big Show to win, you know, for the reasons they've been stating. Oh, he's basically like Andre, the second coming of him. It would make sense for him to be the guy to win the inaugural Battle Royal and all that. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was him or Sheamus or Del Rio or those guys. So do either of you have a definitive pick of who you think is going to win this thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Justin.
Sheamus. It's not even.
I was thinking Sheamus, too. Like, my mind set, like, I don't know, my mind says Sheamus, but my heart says Big Show, if that makes sense.
Right. We texted back and forth about it, you know? And I texted you, Big Show, probably after suggesting that Hulk Hogan was going to show up and win, which you pointed out he's not. He's they're not physically going to allow him in a wrestling ring with trunks on. So and then I sent it to you, and it just hit me. I was like, "Oh, it's Sheamus. What are you thinking?" And I just I fired that back at you, and I still hold that. I think it's Sheamus.
How come you guys don't text me?
International rates, probably. Also, I don't know if I have your phone number.
I don't know if I want to be part of this podcast.
Just throw out your Jinder Mahal prediction.
Is this another former podcast you're going to be a part of?
Ouch. Zing.
Yeah, you know what? I leave them all in burning flames and they die afterwards. There's four people who haven't been announced yet.
Yeah.
Do we think they do surprise well, obviously it's a surprise if they haven't announced them, but, you know, someone outside the main full-time roster. Do we get a Rob Van Dam?
I know Kevin knows at least one person that's showing up, and that's one of the things that he texted me that I think it's a possibility.
Wait, do I?
Yeah, Rusev.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think this
What was that noise was for? Was he drooling or is he not a fan?
I do not like him.
Really? Okay.
I liked him at one point for like a real brief stretch in NXT and then nah. Big Show would be my pick.
I do think it would be nice like if like the NXT champion got a shot in this just for being the NXT champion, you know, like all right, you're the champion of this company, and why don't we give you a spot in the Battle Royal, see if you can prove yourself or do whatever. It's like, I wouldn't mind seeing like a Neville be in this thing. Yeah. I don't would stand a chance, but...
Throw in Neville and Bo Dallas, maybe.
Or even you could just have like, you know, I don't like them, but like, okay, the Ascension are also tag champs of NXT. You know, throw them in there. I don't know. I just think, you know, there's probably going to be some legend or something too. Like, I was thinking, I thought there was someone going in the Hall of Fame who's like Jake Roberts or somebody like that. Who wanted to be on WrestleMania or the Rumble or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be inducted to the Hall of Fame anyways. If he can pass their physical, why not just throw him in there?
Can we get, like, a Jake the Snake stare down with Santino's Cobra?
I would be all for that.
I would. That would tickle me in just the right spot. Yeah, that needs to happen. Or if he, like, kind of wrangles him or can very easily control... He wouldn't even have to get in the ring. He could just control the snake and have him just, like, beat other people. And I'd be okay with that. Whatever makes Jake the Snake happy.
I hope he isn't on the card, because I, Matt Waters, little as this known, have a phobia of snakes. And I freaked the F out when he put that snake on Ambrose's face.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
D. Ambrose had an opposite reaction of you.
Yeah, he's... Well, I mean... He like tickled his face with a snake. I mean,
well, I think he was just joyous to be in the ring with Jake the Snake Roberts. You know what I mean?
Well, sure. He was also, they cut a tight shot intentionally because Jake the Snake was like stroking it like it was a giant cock.
Yeah.
And CM Punk blurted out, PG, Jake, PG.
Yeah.
And that smirk on his face. I mean, how do you, no one can blame him for that.
No, of course not. What a guy.
Yeah.
So speaking of Dean Ambrose, or do we? I'll say Sheamus too.
Go for that. Okay.
And then Matt, you said Big Show.
I did.
And Justin Sheamus. Okay, great. So speaking of Dean Ambrose, he's going to be part of a 6-man tag team match with his fellow Shield brethren, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. They take on Kane and the New Age Outlaws. Yeah, no, that's a match that's actually happening. I don't know. I think this is another one that can go either way because. If I'm WWE, I'm keeping the Shield together right now as this awesome face unit because people are loving them some Shield right now. Like, I think it was weird the way they did this because I think they were gearing them up for a breakup, right?
Yep.
But the way they did everything with it was like, I don't want these guys to split up. I want them to get it together and stay together. And so I hope that's the case, and I hope the Shield win. But again, if they're going to have the Shield go Splitsville, then Kane the Outlaw's winning would... not be a surprise, but I don't want that at all.
Well, one part of me thinks that Ambrose, at least Ambrose, possibly Ambrose and Rollins, because there's talk they want them to be a heel tag team and Reigns to go solo. But Seth Rollins has been like the best wrestler in the world for 3 weeks now. I don't know, he's just been really good. And he's getting good face reactions because he does all the crazy athletics. So possibly just Ambrose betrays and joins up with Kane and the Outlaws. But I also want them to stay together, so I don't know. I guess Reigns pins Kane to end this quote unquote feud, and they continue to be a cool face unit. But as you said, they have been teasing this, and it did originally look like they were going to do a triple threat match at Mania between the three of them, but that went out the window.
And it seems like that all stopped, because I don't really think they've been doing any teasing of them breaking up lately, like not really so much since a couple weeks after the Wyatt's match at Elimination Chamber. So maybe they're just taking things kind of in a new direction. Because like, yeah, they did a SmackDown thing where they kind of like hit each other to kind of get out all that aggression. It's one of those things like once you get in a fight with somebody afterwards, you're cool.
Yeah.
Because you got it all out and you're released and, you know, whatever. Just kind of how dudes work.
But that could be like the swerve. Like they had all this tension for...
Definitely. And that's, why I say that.
For a long time they had tension. Like Ambrose stepping in to sort of interrupt Reigns, and Reigns giving him these little looks and everything. They were doing that for a long time when they were like at their almost strongest. And since they sort of settled everything, Ambrose has been like suspiciously nice, and it could very easily be the turn is coming, you know.
I also think they might be splitting another team in another match, so we'll get to that in a minute. So I don't know how effective two splits on the same show would be, but Justin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel the same way. A split here kind of would undercut a lot of what the Shield. I think the Shield deserves like a big WrestleMania moment like this going over them, like at least one last moment, because they're breaking up for sure sometime this year.
Yes,
100% they're going to be broken up. Strangely enough, I think Rollins and Reigns are the better tag partners, and I'm not really that interested in an Ambrose Rollins just team. I've been saying for a while now how they should split, and as Kevin said, we'll get into that in a second. I just have to say that it's just another case of the New Age Outlaws. It's just a log jam there. Like there are so many other guys, and I go in and number how many different people I would like to see here outside of the New Age Outlaws. In the column, you'll read that, and it's ludicrous.
I don't want to spoil your column, but where is Luke Harper and Eric Rowan on this show?
That's one of the ones that I chose. I mean, that's obviously they're going to be playing heavily into a match later on as Bray Wyatt competes, but that's a story you can build. That's Kane going, you've had success against them. They're going to be in a match. And Bray goes, what's in it for me? And Kane says, whatever you want. You want something, I'll give it to you. You get one favor. And he smiles and said, good enough for me. And now he's got this chip he can play that affects his feud. It affects Kane's feud. It's a thing that matters. And at the end of the match, if Kane is like instructing them to go in and they just bail and they obliterate Kane, that's another thing that you can build toward. Now it's just like three really old guys fighting the best group.
It's Kane and Triple H's buddies.
Yeah, that's really what it is. And I understand that's the thing too, is that a lot of people say, oh, well, they're a part of the Authority. This is supposed to be connected to the Authority. But Triple H made it very clear, Kane's business is his own. You know, I know they're playing up, he's a part of them, but not. But this would better separate it, that Kane was going outside of the Authority to sort of handle his personal business.
Outside
now,
to get some outlaws.
There you go. So I've been calling these guys the corporate outlaws, but it's just a waste of...
I do got to say, when all three of them came out in suits on Raw, I was like, all right, that's pretty fucking cool. I don't know, just like the three guys from the Attitude Era all selling out. I was like, all right, I kind of
true.
Yeah.
True.
Just the side of it. I don't know. Like I said, like I don't really have like a ton of problems with it, you know, in terms of, because I think the build's been pretty okay. And, you know, I do think the Shield's going to win. I don't, as much as they are, again, Triple H's friends, like what do the Outlaws and Kane really have to benefit from a win here? Nothing at all.
That's the danger, is that it's so easy to justify a win. Go, well, we're splitting up the Shield anyway. We can do a little catalyst moment.
I know,
and then
I know.
My buddies get a win and everyone gets to stroke themselves because of how smart we are. So fuck it. I think the Shield are going to win, but I can easily see it going the other way.
Again, voting with our hearts here, people. All right, so let's get into the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match for the WWE Tag Team titles. The Usos are putting up the belts against the Real Americans of Cesaro and Jack Swagger, Ryback and Curtis Axel, and Los Matadores. I'm just going to say it. I think the Usos are winning, and I think this is where they split the Real Americans for certain. Probably meaning that the Usos will pin Cesaro in some way, maybe Zeb or Swagger, somebody costs him it. But I'm hoping this means Cesaro leaves and gets to be a face, an awesome face, maybe even kind of like a heel who plays up his face. I don't know. But I think this is where the real Americans are, Denzo.
For sure.
I don't think they're done here. I really don't.
But do you think it's a big step anyways, maybe?
I think there will be. Yeah, I think this will be probably be a large part of it. They're so good, the little things in this feud. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but the match where the Real Americans beat the Usos non-titled, earned their shot. At the end, all three are in the ring. Cesaro, Jack Swagger, and Zeb. And Jack Swagger goes for a high five. And Cesaro kind of doesn't see it. And so Jack, as he lowers his hand, Cesaro catches him and goes for the high five. And then, but now Jack doesn't see him, so he just stops and looks at the camera. And I thought, is that them showing they're still not on the same page? They can't even freaking high five? Or was that an accident? Because Cesaro's been doing these little things for a while now that I thought was just, I don't know, really clever. And so it feels like they had this great win, and they're still sort of, even this small moment, not really paying attention to one another. I think they're going to split, but I don't know. I don't think it's going to be here. Because they teased the Shield splitting, and they're not necessarily going to. I think they're just testing things. They're seeing how they like them. And, you know, the WWE changes their mind all the time.
Right. It's just surprising me that after the success Cesaro had with his singles matches with Cena and doing great in the Elimination Chamber, matches with Sheamus and things of that nature, that he's not like this would be the time where I'd break him up and have him primed to be, you know, a main event player by or around SummerSlam.
Yeah, I totally agree that they should. I think, you know, that's the thing with the Shield is that I thought that break Reigns away from them. You can even have Reigns and tags with his cousins, the Usos, as sort of a dominant face and a very different style of wrestling from them, where he's much more he's less of the diving and the flying and more of the fist to face kind of guy. And have Ambrose and Rollins left without anything join up with Swagger as kind of a American Shield type thing, and then have Cesaro either team with or just join, because they have a lot of Euro guys on the roster that are like Sheamus, and Rusev is coming onto the roster, figure out what to do with Barrett as a United Nations faction. I think that shift is fresh. It gives people kind of different angles to work and keeps them what we like about them. I think that'd be really smart. Funny enough, I don't think any of this is starting here. I think it's going to be down the road, but because I agree, I think the Usos are winning.
Yeah, I don't know if they necessarily totally split here, but I could see something, you know, I don't know, Cesaro maybe uppercut Zeb or something like that. Like some big step in this.
Kill him! Like, oh, he can't uppercut Zeb!
What? He's a grandfather, for God's sake.
I guess we'll find out. But yeah, when I think of, you know, the reason I bring up Cesaro being kind of a top star is when I think ahead, Money in the Bank's in June. It's in late June this year, and we only have one title now, which presumably means only one Money in the Bank match. And I was a little worried at first because when they had two titles, it seemed they would always give one briefcase to a trusted person, someone who's been there before, and then a new guy to kind of test the waters with, like your Sandows and The Miz and Swagger and things of that nature. And I'm hoping they'll still be able to use it as a stepping stone for certain guys. Like, they won't just give it to, I don't know, for like John Cena, Randy Orton again, you know what I mean?
Right.
And the two guys I can see on the roster now taking it and getting that, you know, being given the proverbial ball, I know Justin, you hate that, but work with me here, would be a guy like a Roman Reigns or Cesaro. Those are the two guys I can think of right now who have not been a world champion, who could use that as the springboard to the next stage of their career. So I hope Cesaro is reaching that point in the near future.
I think we said, you know, on a off air on another podcast, I was like, Cesaro's this over and he has not busted out a UFO.
Right.
Not once. When that happens, shit's going to go crazy.
Yeah, maybe it could be a WrestleMania moment.
Oh man, I kind of thought about that because he could. I also want to see him do the, he used to do this too, and I think he could pull it off to Diego and Fernando, the double giant swing.
Yes, very, very true.
So, yeah.
Could he do the double giant swing while giving El Torito the UFO at the same time?
Oh, my gosh. That would,
if anything, that would make him weigh less.
Perhaps.
Yeah, that's true. God, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, I do want to say too. I like this match for what it is, and no offense to the other teams, but I really do think it's kind of crummy that Goldust and Cody aren't in this.
Huge disappointment. I don't know what you know. I feel like they think they need like heat here for Ryback and Curtis Axel, to sort of be the bad guys. But and Los Matadores, I mean, they're fine, but I don't really care for them that much either. I would have replaced them with Goldust, Cody Rhodes, and a returning Air Boone, Kofi Kingston, and Evan Bourne.
Is Evan Bourne ever going to return?
Yes, it's going to happen eventually.
Could it
this
be in the Battle Royal?
He should have came back.
Okay, buddy.
Could it be in the Andre Battle Royal? Huh?
No. Why would you bring back a high flyer in a match he's going to get thrown immediately
to
out?
To jump onto a pile.
Exactly. He can pull a Mil Máscaras in the 97 Rumble and just do a giant shooting star press onto a pile of people on the floor.
Break his leg again. They should do the Usos versus Rollins and Ambrose versus the Real Americans versus Cody and Goldust, and everybody but the champions breaks up and turns on each other, and then they just do double splashes and win.
And Usos are just like, okay, cool, all right.
Yeah. This is easy. And then they dance.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe the Matadores are on here because they're, you know.
Because they don't weigh much and throw them around.
Well, because Carlos Colon's going in the Hall of Fame.
But they don't acknowledge that they're them.
But
they
did. They finally did.
When?
On the website. It's kind of officially part of the canon since they're going to be inducting him, I think.
Yes. Them and Carlito are inducting him to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why are they not just unmasking him and being like, yo, we have a small bull with us now?
There was apparently something on the network where they showed them unmasked as Diego and Fernando. I did not see it, but apparently it happened.
So they're just changing their names.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, Justin.
I have said for a while that I think this gimmick was created so that when Sami Zayn comes up, they're not saying Ole for him. Because it's so hard to explain why they're saying Ole for Sami Zayn.
I don't know if anyone outside of Florida is going to do that for him, though.
I totally disagree. I think it's a group. It's the same with any change. A group of people starts doing it. It's on TV. They hear it. It catches on with that live crowd. It catches on again and again and again. I think after time, I think it stays. I really do.
I don't know. People chanted Husky Harris at Bray Wyatt, and that happened precisely once.
Well, yeah, they did it the one time, but you know, Husky Harris, it's a reverse thing. You know, I think they chant the Ole chant comes from a genuine love for the wrestler, rather than just taking a dig. People liked Bray Wyatt. There was
I guess that's why that went away, and A-Train and Albert didn't go away from Tensa.
Right.
And now he's just called Jason Albert, so.
Jason Albert.
I really want to name him Albert Tensai.
Yeah. So the Usos win.
Yes, the Usos are winning. Wow, that was a lot more time on that tag match than I thought. But there we have it. So now we're getting to the meat and potatoes of the show, the upper echelon stuff. Yeah. John Cena versus Bray Wyatt.
Ooh.
Now here's an interesting fact, which I think I've said maybe to Justin. This is the first time since WrestleMania 20 where John Cena will not be in a world title match or the main event of the show. And I think that's pretty cool. And I actually think Bray Wyatt's going to win here.
So do I. That? And you're about to hear me and Justin go to war about Bray Wyatt, I think.
Well, you don't read my column, so you know.
I read two of them.
Did you read Eat Bray Love?
No, I didn't read that one. That sounds cool. That's cleverly titled. You're smart sometimes.
Occasionally. I have my qualms, but the Bray Wyatt character, I've come around on a lot and admitted that there's a lot more to this. This has a lot more staying power, and that he does a lot of great work. To start off with, I think John Cena is winning this match.
Oh.
I think that it's just there's too much wishful thinking and good things going on in this show. When I look top to bottom, and I'm like, where are they gonna fuck us? And I go, there it is. Because I think they feel like they need John Cena to win this match, and it's too much too soon. They made it about his legacy. The whole feud now is about John Cena's legacy. which is ridiculous because no one made it about his legacy.
Okay, but the song that goes with that video with them talking about his legacy is dope, so I'm okay with it.
Oh, the videos, yeah, the video is wonderful. They always do at WrestleMania great packages. We got a pre-WrestleMania level video package.
Oh, yeah.
That was badass. Yeah, I totally agree. But this is the way the feud went. Bray Wyatt, I hate you. I hate everything you represent. John Cena, you talk about my legacy? Like, that's the feud.
No, bro, I think you're talking about my legacy. No, John, I swear it was. I just don't. Bro, you want to take
my
legacy?
You sure, bro? Because I've made this kick-ass video package that I'm just waiting to bust out.
Exactly. Cena did that. He's like, whoever says it first, I'm plugging him into it, and they're getting the business. So,
motherfucker, I have been on iMovie every goddamn night working on this.
It's going to be about my legacy, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. That's a good tip for all the young wrestlers who, like, they feel like Triple H is going to screw them over and be like, we just don't have faith in it anymore, so we're going to put it on Randy Orton for the 17th time. Your next promo, tie it all to your legacy. And, like, tie it to his legacy too.
Who are you?
Yeah, or just tie it to, like, Triple H had faith in me, and his legacy's on the line, you know? Trick him into keeping the belt on you. Because that's the way it works. If you make it about a legacy, that guy wins. Because you're essentially destroying a large block of time. And that's insurmountable, seemingly. So I hope I'm wrong, but I really feel like Cena's going to beat Bray Wyatt.
See, I kind of have the opposite thought of you, as you say there's so much other, you know, goodwill stuff we're putting towards them on this card. But think about how many good guys we have going over here. Especially if you're going to have Daniel Bryan win the WWE title and have all that happen, if we think that's going to happen, you can afford to have Bray Wyatt beat John Cena here, because we already have, you know, the Usos, who are the faces going over, the Shield, who are faces going over, perhaps a face winning the Divas title, the Battle Royal, and, you know, in the other upper card matches. So that leaves Bray to be like the one guy who can take down Cena and have his moment as the one heel who gets a win here.
I think looking at this is the only match where a heel is going to win or has a chance of winning.
It depends on your definition, honestly. If you're going by what match will make the lot, if you think by the middle of that match, Bray Wyatt won't be the guy that's over, you're crazy. I really feel like he's going to turn that crowd, and just the evolution of watching Cena matches, where he gets the pops, and then it's always a response, and then the boos respond, and then, you know, the kids start getting a little louder, so that the adult men come back and just stomp him the rest of the match. And I don't think the finishing stretch, I mean, that's where he makes his kind of bread and butter. He can win people over with his really energetic, amazing finishing stretches. I don't feel like he's going to be able to pull it off this time. I feel like Cena winning is going to get a bunch of heel heat, funny enough.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, so I'll revise my statement. The person programmed to be the heel for this feud is...
Yeah, the storyline, yeah.
Right. Do we give Bray some kind of home field advantage, even though he's from Florida?
Yeah,
from a swamp.
Just with the character, he's got to have some family in the New Orleans area.
The guy who wrote and performs that song is doing it live.
Yeah,
so.
Did they definitely confirm that? Because I remember hearing that they had contacted him, but I don't remember it ever being official.
I don't know. I heard it a while ago. I guess it hasn't
it's
been.
It's not even his song
confirmed.
Anymore. He doesn't actually own the song.
Yeah, they bought it.
Yeah, it's free. It was on one of those sort of free use sites, wasn't it? And they just were like, yep, thank you.
No, they paid. I mean, they paid him for it. They said this
I heard it was on a...
Yeah, like, from what I heard is, so I guess they have this database in NXT when someone needs a theme song where you can type in, like, a certain artist or something, and it'll bring up a mock-up, something similar. And yeah, this is what Rob Naylor was saying on a podcast. I don't remember which one. But he said, like, you know, when he was with Bray... They typed in Pink Floyd and this song came up and they were like, oh my God, like this is it. And I guess when Bray did a round of house shows before debuting on TV, they changed his song. And someone heard about it and they were just like, just fight for this. No matter what you do, just please fight for your song. Don't let them take it away.
The whole gimmick is wrapped around this song. Almost,
oh yeah.
You know? Everything is involved.
It's so perfect for him. And so I'm glad he did it. I'm glad it's happening. I'm glad they own it. And it's awesome for that guy who did that song too. And I think that's going to be a super fun thing to have them perform live with the whole entrance and everything.
That's another thing.
Killer.
Yeah, it's going to get a huge pop. I'll be excited for that. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They're doing the whole thing of Cena being afraid of Bray Wyatt, and they could almost use that as well, that if Cena comes out first and then he sees the Wyatt family descending to the music performed live and all that, it could be a similar thing to, like, Mick Foley used to talk about the Undertaker's entrance and how it actually genuinely scared him and this kind of thing. So I think they could use the band playing to play into that. And then if Cena does win, I guess your story there is he conquered his fear, kids.
You know, it'd be so awesome. Is if, I'm just thinking about this. This literally just hit me. So you know how the Undertaker will sometimes for his entrance have like a crowd of druids like that he like holding up lanterns or something as he walks down? A
crowd of hillbillies?
A crowd of just like hillbillies who are holding up lanterns. And as Bray and the Wyatt family pass them, they each blow out their lanterns.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's supposed to be this
massive. Briscoe Brothers cameo in there?
That would be great. I mean, their beards are obnoxious enough to fit the show.
God, they're gross now.
Get Jamie Noble. Holding one. He's an
sure.
agent.
There you go.
Trevor Murdoch.
The Godwins. are the Godwins both alive? I think only one's alive, isn't it?
I think both of them are alive.
Are they? Okay.
I think they did a shoot interview pretty recently, actually.
Matt Cross has got a pretty gross beard now.
I don't think he'll be in New Orleans, though.
Oh, damn it.
If I was there, I'd totally volunteer. I could
right?
pull it off.
Okay. Yeah,
are you
so...
not Bray Wyatt? I mean...
Yeah, I don't have the long hair anymore, but I can mess up the do.
I mean, whatever, you'll be wearing a fedora anyways.
Exactly, yeah.
You can just go to, like, a gaming convention and find a bunch of neckbeards and be like, hey, guys, we got a role for you. Most of you already own fedoras, so this will work out.
Could you hold a lantern?
Yeah, I think that'd be tight. But anyways, I guess we'll just have to see what they do. The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar. Now, I gotta say, while the winner here is not in question, I am extremely disappointed with how they've built Brock Lesnar to basically not even be a threat to The Undertaker in this match, which when it's Brock Lesnar, that's really tough to do. And I will say, we're taping this on Sunday the 30th before the Raw on the 31st. So maybe they're going to do some awesome thing where it's like, holy shit, Brock has a chance. But as of now, I don't think there's even reasonable speculation that Brock's going to win here. And it's, you know, it's always obvious that Taker's going to be the one to win, but this year, more so than ever, it's like, wow, like Brock just looks like a chump. So I got to say I'm disappointed in that, but I hope the match will be really good because I like both these guys and they've had really good matches in the past. Granted, that was like 12 years ago, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm disappointed this is even happening. I don't see how they're going to have a good match. I don't think The Undertaker can go with him. And Brock clearly has had some problems. Well, he's reeled it in a bit more recently, but he has some problems with not being incredibly stiff, and he could actually legitimately really hurt The Undertaker if he doesn't. And I don't know, I'm just imagining this sort of trudging, boring match where The Undertaker wins and it doesn't really look all that believable, and he's probably gonna tap him out to Hell's Gate. And yeah,
all right, so here's how I would fix this. And I'm not even gonna this isn't gonna make the column, so I can say it. There's this thing I've wanted to happen to the Undertaker streak for a while. I don't want it to end because obviously there's too much value in it existing and being able to call it the greatest streak in all of sports entertainment, which is just, you know, borderline retarded, but whatever. They can say that and it's marketable and fine. I wanted someone to beat the Undertaker prior to their match. Not beat them, but like cause them to like tap out or something. Like beat the old man down and get their moment beyond the match. And later on in the show, like during the Divas match, when it ends, you just see this person fleeing, like bloody and like burned or something. And the Undertaker is just like chasing after them like crazy. That's what I do here. The way that Brock Lesnar beat up a Big Show, if I remember correctly, is he just throttled him before the match. Then they rang the bell. They had a little match and that was it. I mean, it was fine for what, you know, I would have liked to have seen Lesnar kind of try to toss him around, but whatever, you know, I don't want him to kill him.
He did enough five.
I want to see Brock take the Undertaker down and destroy him pre-match. I want to see him put him in the Kimura and tap the Undertaker out before the match even occurs, before anything happens, and just break him down. And so it's this kind of cowardly act that also makes Brock look like a crazy monster. And later in the show, it's just that moment where you hear Paul Heyman like screaming or something, or Brock Lesnar comes like flying out from the ramp, and he's got this crazed look on his face, and maybe, you know, like the Undertaker's literally dragging Paul Heyman behind him, or he's on his shoulder and he's just got, you know, his arms at his side, and he's just staring daggers at Lesnar, and he just destroys Lesnar. He calls for the bell because the match never happened. Match can happen now. He just beats Lesnar straight up, and Lesnar has a moment that he can brag about. Paul Heyman can justify it by saying, the Undertaker attacked us, you know, after the match was done, and, you know, and it was an unfair advantage. The Undertaker gets to keep his streak, and everybody wins. That's my pitch.
Have they really done anything with Paul Heyman trying to get retribution for Undertaker beating his client last year? Have they incorporated that at all?
Yeah, in his little promo.
In his promo, that's it.
He blamed the Undertaker for getting rid of CM Punk. That was a really good... Like, we did a podcast before that, Chicago Raw, saying how on earth are they going to do this? And I think Heyman's promo is actually a pretty damn good way of deflecting. Like, he acknowledged it
and then
moved on from it, and it got heat on Lesnar, and it got...
Because I remember Justin saying, like, that's how they should open Raw, just have someone who is working heel come out and do a promo on CM Punk. And once you know it, Justin, that's exactly what they did.
They stole the heat, and that's what they needed to do.
And it was perfect. Yeah, it was very nicely incorporated. But, yeah, I you know, it's funny, because I figured just after that, they didn't even have to say CM Punk's name. They could just say, you know, you beat my client last year, and this is, I'm going to bring back my beast of a client. Or something along those lines. I don't know. Right. But yeah, I thought I was going to be way more excited for this match, and I'm just not all that into it.
Well, because we don't buy it. I mean, I don't. There's no scenario where I can imagine Brock. You know what I watched recently? Brock Lesnar versus Hulk Hogan. When Brock was 25
well,
and Hogan smeared was
the blood.
Oh, he just killed so. Hogan.
And he, yeah, he gave him the F5, and then like he started giving him a bear hug, and blood just like bleh, just vomiting blood onto Brock, and he just left him there. And I thought, but the match itself, they had to make Brock look so stupid to lose, to allow Hulk Hogan to like get to his feet, and he's so and you know and not just basically you know throw him into the audience and just murder him. They had to make him look like an idiot, and that's what everyone had to do with Hogan. That's kind of where we are with The Undertaker. If it's not a smaller guy, a lot of work and planning has to be done start to finish to make it believable. So I don't know if Brock was kind of the right guy for that. And I don't know what they're saving Cena Undertaker for, or if they just decided that's going to be the match they never have.
Dallas Stadium is my guess.
I don't think they ever have it.
I think they do Taker Cena as Taker's final match in Dallas Stadium at Mania 32.
It was funny to hear that, you know, they always asked The Undertaker, I guess, before a couple months before who you'd like to face. And he was like, I'll face Daniel Bryan.
And I was like, oh, fuck. So,
for that, okay.
And they probably got mad at him and they weren't going to do it. Maybe in California next year. I think I'm going to.
Sting.
Maybe.
They keep suggesting.
They keep wanting to do it. You know, who knows if Sting will do it.
I mean, why the hell not? I mean, I'm sure Sting would do it. I don't think.
Why the hell not? I mean,
come on. The moment of Sting standing in a WWE ring across from The Undertaker alone is.
Let's put it
They don't even have to wrestle. Just punch, Scorpion Death Drop, kick out, sharpshooter, almost dies, rises up, choke slam, tombstone win.
Yeah, that'll be their match.
Yeah. It could literally be 2 minutes, but it would probably get like the biggest reaction of the night.
You can put Sting in the Hall of Fame, get a Legends contract, make some DVDs, do a bunch of stuff with him.
He's from Cali.
All about I just don't care about Sting. I guess that's my thing. So I just don't give a shit about Sting.
I used to really care about Sting.
Like, I do think it's very interesting that he's like the one big name who's never competed in WWE.
Yeah, I wrote a whole article about it.
And now he's losing that, apparently. So maybe that sort of... Who's after him? Who's the highest profile guy to never work in the WWE?
Gosh, I don't know.
Is there anyone left?
I don't think so, to be honest with you.
If you exclude, like, foreign talent.
Yeah, exactly. I'm talking just specifically domestic people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the list of people who have never worked in WWF is super short, because even you have, you know, guys who worked, like, Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody and those guys even worked, like, you know, garden matches every so often in the 70s. Yep.
I was reading a headline, like, I skimmed over a headline earlier about someone who never worked for the WWE, but they weren't. Like huge, I don't remember who it was. I can maybe try and bring it up, but I really don't think it was anyone big at all. I think he is by far the largest guy to have never
Yep.
And some people say like Samoa Joe, but I think even he had like a
he's not a star.
Velocity. I know, and he's not a star, and he also I think he had a match.
Like I'm sorry, but like nobody from TNA in my mind counts as a star. At least someone who's like a homegrown TNA talent.
Nah, the closest they've got is AJ Styles, and even he is only a star in like a very specific region of the country.
And they don't have him anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
Jared will probably.
Yeah.
Because that's a company that's going to happen. All right, so we got our last two matches tied together. Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. Winner gets to be in the third spot in the WWE World Heavyweight Championship triple threat match later on. Yeah, Justin, I know you've had a lot of things to say about Daniel Bryan and Triple H in the past, so I'm going to throw this to you.
I mean, it's pretty simple. If Daniel Bryan doesn't win this, you'll never see another Raw again. There's no point in continuing to follow the WWE. It's so cut and dry, the match has no purpose other than to just serve as a road bump. Dragon Gate does this all the time. When they're going to change champions, that challenger first has to go through this roadblock. It's usually not at the same night, and it's usually not on the biggest show of the year, but here we are. And I think they really put Daniel Bryan through the ringer, but the more you think about it, you know, they're – he's going to be able to say that, you know, he beat Evolution by himself in one night. Spoiler alert, who I think will probably end up winning the main event or should win, end up winning the main event. Yeah, Brian here. I mean, it's got to be, right?
Yes.
Yeah. See, it's funny because that's his catchphrase.
Anyway, you're welcome.
I would be completely befuddled if they did not have Bryan win here. I see no positives in Triple H winning here, except for him just to beat Daniel Bryan for the sake of beating Daniel Bryan. I think it would be extremely, extremely foolish if he were not to win.
Can you imagine how Randy Orton versus Batista versus Triple H would go?
That's the other thing, is you have three like just heels in the main event. You just screwed Daniel Bryan, like.
How did the fans not literally set fire to the building?
Yeah, it's risky. So,
and then Ric Flair's music plays, and it's a four-way.
But that's the thing, is it's so cut and dry, as Justin said. It's so easy to just be like, yeah, put Bryan in there, put him in the main event, and we're good to go. So let's jump to the main event then, since there really wasn't much to speak of. Randy Orton versus Batista versus TBD for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. The three of us are in agreement that TBD is going to be Daniel Bryan. Is it safe to presume that we all think that Daniel Bryan should end WrestleMania 30 with the WWE World Heavyweight title around his waist?
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, he should. Yeah.
Do you think
will
he
will? Though?
I don't think he will.
No.
Not Batista.
Yep.
But why?
Wow.
I'll just give it away. It doesn't, because I've said so little about everything else. I'm going to say contractual obligation.
Interesting.
I think Batista came back because he said, I want to win the Rumble and I want to win the belt. I think anything less would be, I don't want to say contract breaking, but I feel like if they said, listen, if we don't put it on Bryan, he'll riot. He'll go, I don't care.
Nah.
You're putting it on me.
I don't think Dave gives a shit about that. I think he just wants money. And
sure,
a camera pointed at him. I don't think he cares about losing.
I think he doesn't give a crap about money.
He's lost to some people since coming back,
right?
And he's been made to look silly by people. If he cared about glory, he wouldn't have been booked the way he has been.
There's nothing on the line.
I don't think he cares at all about that. I think he will happily tap out to Daniel Bryan.
I think he doesn't. This idea that he cares about money is
well,
strange to me, because he left the lucrative position to go do the non-lucrative stuff, like fighting.
Sure, but
and being a,
I'm sure he's getting way more money now.
I'm sure he is gaining more money, but I don't think that's the driving force. I think this guy wants to stand tall.
I think he did a film. Well, he did a few films, and he's gonna have a big one coming out. And I think he sees it as a promotional tool. I think he said, I'll come back for a little bit of money and cameras pointed at me regularly, and then they can help promote my film because I've seen how they can promote things. and then I might stick around, but I'll probably go.
But couldn't they just give him the belt around SummerSlam when there's movies in theaters?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of promoting Guardians of the Galaxy in April
to
this audience? And they don't mention it for the next, you know, few months or whatever.
Well, why not just have Batista? I mean, there are easy ways that they could have made Batista likable. They could have made him a face.
I disagree.
Very easily. I mean, you can make anyone anything. Put him on the side of Daniel. Have a guy, Daniel Bryan's been beaten down this entire time. Have Batista come back and go, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you were that guy. What's happened to you that he's the guy that got away. Here's Orton and Triple H still like sucked into this wrestling void where everything's shitty and terrible. And Batista shows up, and now the guys that were, you know, that fought the system or whatever, they're the system. And they're like beating down the one guy who just is just not smart enough to build an army. Like, that's what it comes down to. That very easily. That's how he came back at first, giving this look at Triple H, like, what are you doing? Like, what is this that you've become? And they just don't want to pull the trigger.
You see, and I was always waiting for a line where Batista says, you know, for a guy who used to be all about evolution, you sure are not about it anymore. And everyone just goes,
never happened.
Justin, I agree with everything you're saying, but no one is a babyface in a main event that doesn't include Daniel Bryan this year. Nobody. I don't care what they do to make him look good. It's going to be Ray at the Rumble as number 30 again.
Yeah,
it's nothing against the individuals. You were just getting booed if you're not Daniel Bryan in that main event.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone's... I've never heard anyone question that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You cannot make him a babyface.
Not now. Certainly not now.
Well, I don't think there was any way of making him a babyface.
Yeah,
As long as Daniel Bryan remained as popular as he has, and he has, there is no way to make anyone else the main event babyface at WrestleMania.
Well, I didn't even say make him the main event, like babyface. I mean, that's not necessary. I'm saying is they could have made him not completely loathsome. is what I'm getting at.
I guess. I guess they could have done the title match as the second from main event and with Daniel Bryan beating Triple H or something. But
if there was some sort of contractual obligation, I think by now it would have come out in the dirt sheets or elsewhere.
Mm.
That's all I'm saying.
And I don't think they would have progressed the way they have in terms of the storyline. I think they would have kept it. I don't think they would have even mentioned Daniel Bryan having a chance of making the main event if they wanted to.
I honestly believe they are in serious... they would be doing some serious irreparable damage to their business if they do not give Daniel Bryan the title at WrestleMania.
I agree, but they've done terrible irreparable business before, and I hope I'm wrong. That's the thing.
I guess.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like Batista somehow, some way, is walking away with the championships. Booze be damned. He's going to walk away with it. The only thing that really works against it is that there's kind of been a string of kind of bad guy endings. I feel like there's not bad guy endings, but just not the most popular guy walking away with the championship, with Cena beating Rock. And then I guess Rock beat Cena in the previous main event, so that doesn't count.
Cena beating Rock was my popular decision, but
hey. Right. I wanted it the other way. I wanted Rock to beat Cena completely and have Cena just get him out of the main event for a while. But
it did, kind of.
That can't happen. No, it thrust him right back.
He's like on the fourth match down.
I mean, that's
the lowest you have ever seen Cena since he was the White Rapper.
At WrestleMania, yeah, but the whole year was still a lot of it was dominated by John Cena. I mean, you can't say it wasn't. But yes, on this particular card, they made a conscious effort to lower Cena's stature. But guess what? On the poster for WrestleMania 30, there are 9 superstars. 8 of them are surrounding one man, and I'll give you one guess who it is.
Okay, that is true.
So the whole freaking universe, as I say over and over, the WWE universe that they exist in revolves around John Cena.
Or it's a pyramid where Hulk Hogan is at the top.
Brother.
That's how they pitched Hogan. I guarantee you. He's like, why am I surrounding John Cena, brother? And he's like, no, it's a pyramid. Oh, yeah, and I'm on top. Yeah!
We never even got to mention that Hulk Hogan's going to be hosting this show. What that means, who knows? But he's going to be doing that.
He's still going to look like an old wallet. That's what he looks like now.
Do you think that I'm guessing Triple H and Daniel Bryan goes quite a while, so Triple H can be like, look, guys, I'm still a wrestler, and it's, like, hellacious, and Daniel Bryan...
I guess it depends on its spot on the card.
I guess it's lower down. But I was saying, I'm thinking Bryan wins, and then Triple H, like, attempts to literally cripple him. And
yeah.
then win the main
yeah,
event. And then I think you do, like, 5 minutes of main event without Daniel Bryan, and then his music hits, and people go absolutely bananas, and he comes in taped up, and...
Can you risk 5 minutes of Orton? And
maybe not 5 minutes, but
can you even? I feel like they're gonna like, let's see how long we can go. 8 seconds go by. They're like, no, get him now. I don't care.
See, I imagine that it's the semi-main. Bryan wins. He's celebrating. Triple H beats the fuck out of him. He's laying in the ring as Orton and Batista do their entrances, and Bryan's like lifting himself up using the ropes. Like, you know, shaking his head, getting fired up, just like, yeah, let's do it, come on. As they ring the bell for the match, and then Batista and Orton just jump him, toss him to the outside so he can get some rest while those two wrestle, and then when it gets dire, he can jump back in the ring and do some stuff.
It's basically the same to me.
It's pretty predictable, honestly. I can kind of already picture what happens in the event, so it's kind of, it's kind of cool. But
do you think you see Brie or Stephanie doing anything during the main event? Or I guess rather during Bryan versus Triple H.
Brie slapping Stephanie. Can you imagine?
No.
And then she just
steps
aside and points at Nikki and goes,
I don't see Stephanie doing anything physical yet. Or I don't
know. Speaking of women doing anything, do you think Lita will do anything in the Divas Battle Royal?
No.
She's going in the Hall of Fame. She could slap AJ.
I've listened to like 5 podcasts with her on now because everyone had her as a guest, and she seems totally cool just not doing anything with wrestling anymore. It was basically just like, yeah, I went there, I did my stuff, I got tired of it, so I left.
Fair enough.
She like doesn't watch wrestling anymore. She's happy just like, you know, living outside of the country doing stuff.
Yeah, they train wrecked her with a machete. Yeah, the way she left that company was just horrific. So
yeah,
you can't blame her.
It's bad times. But
won't be bad times is Daniel Bryan standing tall doing a yes, holding a WWE World Heavyweight Championship while tens of thousands of people say yes.
That would pretty much be the best.
Yeah.
You know what we didn't mention either about the Andre the Giant Battle Royale? They said that the Memorial Trophy, this person is going to carry it around for a while.
Is it a thing or is it a one-time?
I don't know. They said he's going to have it, so...
And also, while battle royals are traditionally pre-show, I think it would kind of be a bit of a mockery if it was on the pre-show.
Oh, they're doing 7 hours of WrestleMania this year.
It seems that putting Andre's name on it and then not putting it on the event proper would be kind of a slap in the face. But then again, it's Vince. Slapping people in the face is his business.
That's true. I mean,
quite literally.
All of these, anything can change at the last second with any of these matches. I hope that, and I think, I kind of feel like there's a good mix of, I have no clue what's going to happen, and well, that's a foregone conclusion. Whereas in previous years, I don't know, it's always seemed rather obvious what's going to happen in a lot of these matches. And outside of Undertaker, Lesnar, and then the two Daniel Bryan matches, I'm kind of up in the air on everything.
Which is a good thing, I think.
Yep. It's the only thing intriguing about the show that makes me want to watch is I don't know what's going to happen.
So are we all watching WrestleMania?
Yeah, I accidentally got the WWE Network. So.
Accidentally?
Yeah.
What am I doing? Why are my hands moving and signing up online?
What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? I'm just doing exactly what Jerry Lawler does, but I'm not messing it up.
Right. I got it on a Saturday, the trial, and it was on the next Friday, and I'm like, all right, I got to cancel this thing tomorrow, and I got a message from PayPal saying I'd given them $10, and I'm like, oh, I guess I got it on Friday. Shazbot. Okay, well.
That's how I ended up with NBA League Pass.
Wow, that's...
That's expensive.
Yes, that is. Holy crap.
I'm enjoying it, though. It's cool.
Yeah, I was
going
to say,
Kevin,
at least
Kevin,
it's something
sports.
You enjoy. Yeah.
Yes, no, I understand what sports are. Okay. Yeah. My roommate likes sports, so.
You say that like it's like a weird band that are annoying. My roommate likes sports.
Yeah. Well, it's just sometimes like basketball. Like, I don't know who those people are or what you're even talking about.
Michael Jordan is still the NBA World Heavyweight Champion.
In my mind.
he feuds with Dr. J. Yeah, who's not a real doctor.
Mm-hmm. No?
Nah, it's like Dr. Death Steve Williams, you know.
He's not a doctor?
Okay, Steve Williams was a real doctor.
He's for sure a licensed physician, or was.
Oh, all right. Well, then I look stupid.
It's funny because Matt thinks we're serious.
I know, totally.
He's like, oh, God, he actually took that seriously.
I don't know. I've never seen a single one of his matches. Oh
what a shame.
The revelation.
Wow. Do you know it's a great video to watch on YouTube? Anytime Jim Ross does something heelish, it's always hilarious. There was something, it was like after the Brawl for All where Bart Gunn was talking to JR. He's like, oh, are you upset that I knocked out your boy, JR? And JR just goes, first of all, he's not a boy. He's a man. And my friend showed me that, and now I say that all the time. It's a good bit of business. It's on YouTube if you can find it.
Someone did a supercut of Ric Flair doing that corner thing he does where he bumps to the apron. Yeah. And boy, all of the ones with Roddy Piper are just incredible because Roddy doesn't even try to hide the fact that he knows what's going to happen. When he throws him to the turnbuckles, every match he does it in, Roddy just sort of saunters over to where he's going to be for the clothesline. Ric Flair takes forever kind of shaking to get over to the apron. He runs at him and Roddy just kind of sticks an arm out and decks him. It's so funny every time.
I've watched the 92 Rumble like a million times because I think it's my favorite match ever. And by far, my favorite part of the whole match is when Flair's alone in the ring and the next entrant is Piper. And just the few minutes they have wrestling each other is like the most fun you can get out of wrestling.
I think you will find that you said your favorite match is Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels.
No, I said it's, you know, thinking about it, I was like, okay, it's probably that or like Austin versus Brett for Mania. Mm-hmm. But then when I was watching the Rumble earlier this year, I was like, oh man, like, I've watched this match more than any of them, and I love it to death. I was like, maybe this Rumble's my favorite match. You ever have that moment when you're thinking about it?
Nope.
I can never choose one match.
Right.
I can't. I don't even try to. You know, I can do wrestlers is kind of easy for me to you know, shift around in my head, but matches, there's just so many good ones.
You said Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Chris Benoit.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, best triple threat match ever, for sure. But that match is just
it's so good.
Yeah.
And Eddie and Angle doesn't get enough love, I don't think, for that Mania either.
Right.
God, yeah, it's good.
Well, it does now because it was the show's main event.
No, Undertaker and Kane was the show's main event.
Yeah, they ignored that one, too. That was not good.
Do they? I think it was better than the WrestleMania 14 match anyways.
It had to be. Oh, maybe. You know what? I think I'm thinking of 14. I'll have to go back and watch the other one.
There you go.
14 was awful.
Yes, it was. 20 was, you know, was there.
Got, that's another thing that, since we're talking about WrestleMania, that I noticed in doing research for my column, during the Attitude Era, where the WWF like took off and really beat down WCW into submission, their manias were awful. I mean,
so
all of them were disastrously bad.
like Mania 15 is garbage. 2000's no good.
I like 2000's like, oh, I guess actually that main event was shitty, but like 2000 was like so full of matches.
It had like the triangle ladder match, but that doesn't make it good. Like, do you know what else? I forgot
Mania
that
2000 was like my first Mania, so.
I also forgot that WrestleMania 20 was 4.5 hours long.
Yeah.
I rewatched the whole show and I was just like, fuck. I don't want to watch two 4-way tag matches, god damn it.
That's why I was kind of wondering on, because I was like, isn't that just ungodly long?
It is ungodly.
But yeah, geez. Another thing that I thought was interesting is that WrestleMania is sort of the time, going through history and looking through who dominated matches, it's kind of the time for, it's the place for unrecognized, not necessarily unrecognized, but for the smaller guys, the workers, to really make their mark. Guys like Randy Savage and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, I mean, they were big in the WWE, but in terms of their greatest matches, their greatest triumphs, this was the best stage to do it because it was the most time you're going to get, and they always delivered. I mean, well, they didn't always deliver, but you could count on them to deliver time and time again. I feel like Dolph Ziggler needs a chance to be that guy, like deserves a chance to have those 20-minute matches, or at least give him one shot to have a really, really standout, unbelievable match.
You mean he won't get over being in matches like Team John Laurinaitis versus Team Teddy Long?
no one gets over Magic because people try to purge it from their brains. I want him to get an honest shot. That's all I really want to see him get. So I don't think he'll get it. But
hey, Justin, do you want to yell at someone for a few minutes?
Sure.
I don't like Dolph Ziggler. Go.
Well, what don't you like about him?
He's boring. There's nothing to him. He's an athletic dude who sells overly.
So what, pray tell, how does he differ from literally almost anyone in PWG?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Because that's
you just described he's not as good a wrestler 85% of their roster.
He's not as good a wrestler as any of them.
Well, I wouldn't describe
Peter Avalon is a better wrestler than Dotnar. He's no character at all, and to me he's a massive charisma vacuum. He comes out and I yawn.
Here's the thing. What have they given him to do?
Nothing. But
what if you
still,
I guess what if
he's
you...
he's been on TV for a while now, and I've yet to find him interesting in any way, shape, or form. So
I guess. I mean I don't blame you for sort of seeing him and going, well, you know, what is he or what is he supposed to be? But
he's Billy Gunn, but not.
I always see, well, that's the thing. Billy Gunn, despite his physique, wrestles.
Billy Gunn was good. I liked Billy Gunn.
No, he very well wasn't. He was a physically dominating guy who wrestled as slow as humanly possible. I don't know why he did
that.
Had
a nice match with Chris Benoit in 2000.
He was blown.
There's also Chris Benoit.
Right.
Chris Benoit had matches with Kane, okay? Yeah. Like, hey, let's not mince words here.
Okay. Dolph Ziggler, I don't get it. I really don't.
I guess I just, about him, and I'm not going to jump down your throat because I understand. It's not like he's doing something to make me go, well, how can you not like that? He's spinning his wheels. They don't give him anything to do.
The nice thing I like about Dolph Ziggler is anytime he goes for a near fall, he make, like, it's smart. Like, I hit a move, like, no waste of time. Let's go for the fall and try to win this damn thing.
He's
desperate to win. But, I mean,
yeah.
But that's not everybody does that.
Yeah.
It's true. I just feel, and like all these matches where everyone's like, oh, he's having all these good matches. It's just that they go long and involve a lot of counters.
That's
PWG,
exactly right.
Retard.
It's like,
yeah, but better people with more charisma are doing it.
Like, that's like me saying PWG is just a bunch of guys going crazy, flying on one another with a bunch of really exciting near falls.
Yeah, boo. Who wants to watch that?
None of them. Dolph Ziggler doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Wait, who doesn't?
Dolph. He doesn't drop kick.
You just said he had a bunch of near falls. I mean, you know, no, stuff like he did the famous.
You 100% did.
I did not. I said there's a load of counters. Counters. And it goes 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I never said near falls.
The thing of it is, I feel like he has
the RKO, and then he gets hit with one anyway, and he loses to Randy Orton 17 times a year.
Which is his fault.
I'm just saying he's dull. It's the same shit.
You could say that about almost any wrestler on the WWE roster.
Never been interesting.
Are you saying he's more interesting than like an Alberto Del Rio?
No. I find Alberto Del Rio more interesting than him.
Really?
Yup.
That's surprising.
He has
what do you find more interesting? That's it. It's a character, whereas Dolph Ziggler's character he has a funny name.
He barely talks, and he doesn't have a personality.
Yeah, Fandango has a better character.
This is a question for Matt. So you said you don't like him now because he has no character. What about when he was doing stuff with AJ and Big E when he kind of had more of a character?
Didn't like it. He didn't feel like I didn't like them together. It didn't feel like a natural progression for her. He was part of her storyline to me.
Yeah, I didn't really. I don't think any of the three of them fit together very well at all.
Well, okay. So my point is, then I don't know if him not being a good character is really what your problem is with him.
I don't. There's nothing to latch onto.
Is there anything that he could do to make you like him? Is really my question, or anything the WWE could do? Is what I'm saying.
I feel I've seen everything he has to offer at this point.
I feel like the bothersome thing is that there is no character. There's nothing for you to go, oh, this is what this is about.
Yeah,
a guy.
Well, that's the thing is, I actually feel the opposite of Matt. Like, you say you've seen everything he's had to do. I feel that way about Del Rio. He's like, he's done this, he's done that. We know.
I'm not saying I like Del Rio a lot more.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like Ziggler has a lot of room for him to grow and improve and, like, do stuff. Right? He's not doing anything.
I mean, yeah, they don't give him anything, but to an extent, you do. He's had platforms to show something, and I've never seen him really. It's just like, yeah, I'm cocky, and it's like, yeah, but who isn't?
I've never seen him in a platform where the rug wasn't like yanked out from under him. I've never seen he gets kind of the Miz treatment where
the one instance I can actually think of, Justin, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're talking about like people getting the time to shine on pay-per-view. Do you remember the title match he had with Edge on a Royal Rumble in 2011?
Yes, I do.
Fantastic example.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So good. And no cap.
The one where no.
That's when we're Del Rio won.
Oh.
And it was Ziggler.
No, not the Rumble. I mean the match. Was it the one where he was he like launched way, way far out of the ring and almost died?
I don't remember that specifically.
Are you talking about the non-spear match? No, there was the one I'm thinking of something completely different. The one where it was the Nexus, I think, were all in the ring and he wait, is that one thing? I don't know. I feel Punk was involved somehow. And then Dolph was
Punk
sent
and Ziggler,
sailing
I think, might
out.
Have been on the Rumble the next year.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, I don't like Dolph Ziggler. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone listening.
You don't have to apologize for your opinion.
I know he's everyone's favorite, and he should win all the titles immediately, but, you know.
I mean, hey. You get that with a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like there's weird fan boys and girls for a bunch of random stuff. Like, there's plenty of wrestlers that people really go gaga over that I just don't care for, so that's fine.
Yeah, I don't really. You'll see people that really love, like, the Triple H, Stephanie, like, they get off on seeing that. And all I can think of is it's just that person that they don't identify with them because you can't identify with that situation. But they would really love to basically enslave people. Like, they would love to be in that position that they could just butt fuck anyone at any time. And that's what gets them off. And I'm like,
she said something on Raw that I thought, okay, that was pretty good, but I don't remember what it was. I think she like stepped in and corrected Randy on something. And it was quite funny, but
she's the worst part of Raw now, because much like Triple H does, she has no understanding of what you're supposed to do when you're a heel. And it drives me crazy that they don't understand this. So there's this sort of thought process where everything is supposed to, well, not everything, but most things are supposed to be kind of gray areas. Is he a bad guy? Is he a good guy? We don't know. You know, he's just a dick or something like that. And I hate it. It's so stupid, because what you have is you have these sort of infallible heels that are getting booed for a while, and then they do something without recourse. Fans don't boo. They just sit there and go, ugh. I mean, you'll hear so many times these end segments that used to in the old days get booed heavily on the way out the door. It's just fans sitting there going, shit, that's not your job. Your job is not supposed to totally and completely frustrate someone to the point where they run out of reasons to yell at you. Because that's where I am with them. I'm just like, what's the fucking point? They're still going to be doing the same stupid thing over and over again. You know, on a loop that they've done for the last 15 years.
Do you think when Daniel Bryan walks out with the title that Triple H challenges him for it at Extreme Rules in a singles match?
Or Daniel Bryan holds that belt. I said it in the write-up I did about Triple H on Rubbed Raw a couple weeks ago. Bryan will hold that belt for as little time as they feel they can get away with.
Mm.
If fans turn on him, which they already are, because they're already pointing at the Yes Movement and going, look, it's a thing. It's a WWE thing now. Look what we've made it. And people are pissed off about it.
Yeah. Fandango, anyone?
Yeah. They're already trying to make it a thing rather than this, you know, this organic thing that they acknowledge exists, but they don't try to take it and slap it on a fucking T-shirt. No, he's not going to. He's going to hold the belt for as little time as possible. If fans start gravitating towards someone else, or if he does something and he gets even a smidgen of a boo, they will yank it off of him before he can blink. They don't. He is disposable as it gets, despite the fact that he sells more merch, and 80 guys sell more merch than Triple H does and anyone else. He's a star because he says he's a star. And because since he doesn't feel it necessary to quantify that with any sort of factual qualifiers, he can just say that sentence and it exists.
That's a lot of WWE's history and how it works.
They just say he's a star because he has the star quality. That's just who he is. And with Daniel Bryan, they'll just yank it from him. They don't have to give it back. They don't have to do any of that, and they can justify it in a business sense. I mean, look at the company. The company puts out shitty movies and shitty TV shows, and the ratings for their program have gone down and down and down every year. It's like leveled out now so that it never changes, but it'll never go back up to the levels they were before. And they don't care. They can justify success in all sort of stupid ways, and that's all they need to do. Same way with Brian. They can, as soon as they can justify taking it off, they will, and they'll put it on whatever muscly guy they want it on, who's one of Triple H's guys.
I meant more, what is Triple H going to do after that? Like, are we going to see the continuation of the author? I mean...
Yes, of course.
I guess he can't just kill it in one night, but it would be nice if he did.
I don't think he'll wrestle. It would be nice. No, I think Triple H now sees himself as important. Undertaker level's important. I only wrestle at WrestleMania now. You understand? Like, I'm not lowering.
He did wrestle Brock at Extreme Rules last year.
Well, that's the thing. Brock was the hot thing. Mm. That was that was worth his time. Essentially.
Let me wrestle him three times.
But you know what they could do? They could just have Triple H be mad at Orton for losing the belt and then just do Triple H versus Randy Orton at Extreme Rules. And since he's wrestling his friend, that might be worth his time.
Yeah. He makes
Daniel Bryan fight Brock Lesnar.
We are so ripe for a Randy Orton turn. I'm dead serious. Him turning right now would be so juicy of him just saying, especially if Triple H starts to kind of favor Batista in some way and Orton just goes, you know, buck fucking crazy. Boy, that'd be a lot of fun.
Did you say butt fucking or buck fudding?
Buck fudding. I might have said buck fucking.
I was is that what we're going to see Batista and Triple H doing on Raw? And Randy
fuck
Young
Bucks?
Who does? I mean,
yeah. So Randy Orton RKOs himself and drags Daniel Bryan on top of him and says, "Pin me! I don't want it anymore. I don't want any of this."
How do you even RKO yourself? I can't easily. Picture it.
Don't ask questions.
Yeah, easily. Without him murdering himself, it's not good.
We're going off the rails here, so I want to end on one last quick topic before we wrap things up. CM Punk. Does he make a surprise appearance on WrestleMania? Is he going to be back maybe after WrestleMania? I mean, there's no way to read into that man's mind, but just do you guys have any thoughts on that?
He's done forever. He's done. Done.
Yeah, he's I don't know what his deal is. Without knowing more information, he's definitely not going to be on WrestleMania. That's crazy to think. I mean, they could use him on the show in a lot of different ways, but it's not going to happen. This feels genuine hatred on both sides. I mean, and it's been brewing since CM Punk signed with the company. This is the way it was always going to end, with them just shit mountain got so big, he couldn't see the ground anymore. And he just said, "I'm sliding down and I'm telling three people and never talking to any of you again." And that seems to be what happened, that he's not communicating with anyone. He's cut himself off of that poison and just let it go. I mean, it's not like a known fact, but it seems – I hear it every year. The reason that they haven't done Punk Austin is because Triple H has insisted if Austin comes back, he's working with him.
Hmm.
And that's got to stick in you – I mean, a little bit to lose that if you're Punk – every year it goes by and every year you don't have that match when he said, "I'd love to do it. I just give me a reason." And they don't even bother to build to it. It's just, that's crazy to me. Why wouldn't you build that match? And it's honestly just ego.
Well, that I'm sure Punk probably didn't like hearing that. If Undertaker asked to wrestle Daniel Bryan, they said, "No, you're wrestling Brock Lesnar." I'm sure he's like, "Great. Well, okay. I guess things aren't going to change around here."
Yeah. He feels like a failure, I'm sure. I think part of the reason he doesn't want to address fans is I think he feels like he promised us something he didn't deliver, which ironically, yeah. I think he did. I think he did deliver, because I feel like he, more than anyone, any other wrestler in history, gave genuine voice to us, to the people that care most about wrestling. He was the one that was cutting promos on. You don't sit down, cut a backstage promo with a bunch of references to fans that have no idea what they're talking about. You have them to the guys that are, you know, keyboard warriors that are there talking tough, but at the same time always defended him and always wanted to see him on top. I feel like deep down he thinks he's failed those guys, but it was a no way. This was a Kobayashi Maru. There was no way it was going to happen. he was going to fail at this because the guy in charge wanted him to fail at it.
Yeah, he can't be. He can't be James Tiberius Punk.
And like he said he wanted that wrestle, like the word that got around was once he realized he was never going to main event WrestleMania, he was done. And I'm sure that as soon as he walked out, Vince probably pitched him some sort of scenario. So, oh, maybe you can main event. And he was, you know, would he want it under those circumstances? Like, once he's made that complaint, would he think they're never actually going to give me a real one? It's just going to be because I said I wanted one. And I think once the Chicago Raw went past and once the appearance on Talking Dead went past and nothing happened, I think that's just it. I don't think there's any way that it's happening now. I think he's made the break in his mind.
And I got to say, I'm getting tired of people chanting CM Punk at Raw. Go chant him at his house if you really want him back.
Yeah, someone said, it may have even been on this podcast, I don't know, but someone said, you don't chant CM Punk at them when he walked away. You go to him and you chant WWE. Like,
yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. What do you think the chant implies?
Yeah, but
are you implying that people are chanting? That you think they're chanting CM Punk because he's going to come out, or that they want CM Punk? They chant CM Punk. I would go to a show and chant CM Punk at Stephanie McMahon and Triple H to remind them what we fucking care about.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's not Batista versus Randy Orton.
Yeah,
that's why I chant.
We want Punk because we have distaste for what you're offering us instead.
Right. Yeah, no one's chanting "We want Punk." No one's chanting "Let's see Punk." They're chanting his name because his name is a rod up Triple H's ass, and when you yell loud enough, it vibrates a little and it pisses him off. Not on screen, but off screen. Because they still fucking care. It pisses off the commentators. We heard the video of them chanting CM Punk. It pisses them off because we're not buying what they're selling. That's the thing, is that CM Punk wanted to offer a new product. And what he didn't realize is that he was pitching it to the guy that owned the grocery store and actually makes more money selling the shitty stuff that he sells.
But see, I think you're giving WWE fans too much credit. I think they just want to be smart asses for the most part.
True.
But that's kind of, I mean, it's not as
like I get what you're saying is they wouldn't want to be smartasses if the product was good enough for them.
Right.
But still.
But will it ever be?
It's just to stick it in Triple H's craw. That's what CM Punk is now. CM Punk represents the thing that these people wanted, that a type of wrestler, a real sort of, one of our guys, a guy that works hard in matches, a guy that cuts unique promos, is different. Does not fit on a cereal box, was the guy that we wanted, and chanting his name reminds him every single time of the type of person that we still care about.
I do wonder if him leaving was supposed to be some sort of martyrdom, but really for them it's just like, well, okay, that pain in the ass is gone.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the thing, is that if he wanted to make a point, he would have made it by now. He would have stood up and said, I had enough of this shit. To CM Punk, it wasn't about making the point. It was him sliding down shit mountain and going and playing in the sun for the first time in a while, doing whatever the fuck he wanted to do without someone calling him and pitching the stupidest idea that they could possibly think up.
Yeah, I think him appearing on Talking Dead as Phil Brooks and not appearing at Raw Chicago speaks volumes.
I think a lot of people seem genuinely mystified at the idea that he could just walk away from it and but he's burning his bridges as if he's going to be desperate to come back. And
as if there hasn't been hundreds of people who've burned bridges with WWE and haven't come back. Billy Graham's was on live television accusing them of the steroid stuff back in the 90s. And a decade later, he's in the Hall of Fame. Look at the Ultimate Warrior.
Savage,
all these guys. Hogan going to Hogan, Hall, Nash all leaving and going to WCW. Yeah.
Signed Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy again in a heartbeat, probably.
Bret Hart.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. If
Austin.
I'm not saying Punk's going to come back if they want him back, but I will say that, you know, there's no bridge burned forever if business comes into play. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, true, but I like how much it pisses off a certain section of the fans that can't fathom that there is life outside of A, wrestling, and B, WWE.
Yeah, I mean...
That his life is literally going to end now.
Punk's always
not...
been good about keeping his hand in multiple projects outside of wrestling and just kind of doing what he wants.
He's like an intelligent, charismatic, well-spoken guy who has passions and friends. He's going to be okay.
He's going to be just fine.
The funny thing is, though, I don't think he's done with wrestling by a long shot. I think he's a guy that he's going to get some distance for a while. And I think I when his contract runs out, I can see him taking time if he's out in California doing commentary on a PWG show.
Yes, because Mystery Vortex is like a completely – like no one knows who's booked and what the matches are. Someone did say, what if the main event is CM Punk versus – but obviously it couldn't be because
– Yeah.
Someone said him versus Masahiro Chono as the main event.
$5 wrestling. I mean, why would you goof around with those guys? Just have fun. Make wrestling fun again. You know, spend some time.
Saying he's going to be at wrestling is fun?
I'm saying he is definitely going to be at wrestling is fun. And he's going to turn that promotion into a WWE rival.
Now, do you think you're talking about him doing commentary and this kind of stuff? Do you think he'll wrestle for any promotion ever again that's not WWE?
Yeah. Not for a while, but yeah, I do.
You think he'll go back to like even like the indies and do that kind of stuff?
Not regularly and not for anything that is sort of not a challenge to him. If there's someone, if he sees someone and goes, that guy I want to wrestle, I think he'll take the plunge because it's the same thing with it was an article Rick Riley back when he wasn't a terrible writer and personality wrote his Sports Illustrated column. He wrote a piece about why Michael Jordan went back to the NBA after the perfect ending. For those that don't know, and for Kevin that doesn't know, Michael Jordan's career ended on a game-winning, like basically a game-winning shot that won the Chicago Bulls their sixth championship over the Utah Jazz.
All right,
And he sat out and he left, but he had to come back because it's wrestling to him. Not only is it a love, it's the fence in the backyard. It's the neighbor's fence when you're a kid. And you see it and you just keep wondering if you can jump over it. And you get a little older and you wonder if you can jump over it. And that's what it represents. It's this thing, can I still do it? Do I still have what it takes? That's what brought Shawn Michaels back. They said, come for a day. He stayed 7 years or something.
And he was arguably better.
You can't, yeah.
And it's hard. And you know, it's hard to argue that he was not better when he came back.
And he, he was good before. He was okay when he came back, but he grew and got into just this incredible wrestler. Mm-hmm. I think Punk at some point is going to take a look at that fence again and say, I wonder if I can still jump it.
Yeah, I wonder if I could beat that Sami Zayn kid.
Right.
I think it's possible. I mean, they know, you know, maybe they talk. I mean, he's not like he's not friends with some people there.
Oh, of course not. Yeah.
And yeah, I can see it happen.
So, Justin, you remember a long time ago when you said you were really interested in if Austin had stuck around longer, like if his neck didn't get hurt and he could still wrestle more than he did?
Indeed.
I always wonder, you bring up Shawn Michaels. I'm very curious about an Attitude Era with Shawn Michaels.
Oh, what it would have looked like with him dominating, because he would have still been. Because
he was around for a bit. Like, he did, like, a commissioner thing, and, like, I think he special ref the first SmackDown and whatever else. But, like, you know, I wonder if it kind of – I don't know if it bugs him necessarily, but he's like, think how big a star is, like, The Rock and Taker and DX and Austin. All those guys became basically, like, household names. And, like, Michaels isn't, for better or worse. He's just really not. Like, you know, there's plenty of people who aren't wrestling fans who, like, everyone knows, you know, The Rock and The Undertaker and those guys, I feel, anyways, when I talk to people. But not people like Shawn Michaels. Who?
It's true. He's not he wasn't in movies. He didn't hit the time. He was in between the crossover eras of, you know, wrestling and music and entertainment. And then the mid-90s happened, and it wasn't as big a crossover. And then when in the, you know, the mid to late 90s, that's when, you know, Rock was on SNL, and there was much more of a crossover. He missed that era. I don't think so. He doesn't seem like the type of guy who wanted to do a ton of movies and stuff like that. If anything, that absence sort of, I think it helped in a way. I bet he'd probably admit that it helped him to get away from it, to find out what he values and what's, you know, what's important to him. And he had to earn his way back. He wasn't a guy, when he showed up, it was just like, oh, he's back. You know, we knew he was important, but we didn't really, you know, it wasn't really like why. We hadn't seen much from him in recent years. So he had to earn his way back. And I think that's part of what made him, his final run, incredible.
Because I remember he's initially not so good. Like, that first match back against Triple H was okay. And then they did the stuff with the NWO that wasn't all that good. And then he got real good.
It was the hair. Once he grew the hair back out.
Yeah, true.
And didn't wear the poo brown tights in the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah. Oh,
God, those are bad.
Oh, they're so bad.
I count from when he wrestled Jericho at Mania onwards as his sort of...
Thinking his Three Stages of Hell with Triple H at Armageddon was pretty good.
I didn't watch it.
I remember liking that. And then, yeah, I like that Jericho feud quite a bit. And, of course, like, 19 was like, yep, I'm back.
Yeah. Actually, didn't him and Jericho, they did some stuff in the Rumble, didn't they? Like,
Yeah, they were 1 and 2. And, yeah. And the guy Christian dressed up as Jericho.
Yeah,
and,
that was Jericho was awesome. Yeah.
And by the way, the Jericho-Michaels feud from 08 is, like, one of my favorite feuds ever.
Every feud that they did, like, every fight that was led up to was so amazing.
Incredible.
And so easily forgotten, because those are the two, in my opinion, the two most famous wrestlers, like, at the top of, you know, drawing money and making money, who are really just kind of famous for wrestling. Even Jericho, with his band and everything else, he's more of a known in wrestling than he is.
Because he even talks about, like, even when I'm on tour with my band, people always ask, so when are you going back to wrestling?
Yeah.
And, you know, if he was famous, it's not like he's in wrestling and they say, so when are you going back to doing Fozzie stuff?
Right.
No one's ever said that. So,
I think that the same with Shawn Michaels. It's that The Rock, because of the personality he was, because of everything else, he could still be The Rock in other places. Chris Jericho is at, like, maximum, you know, Chris Jericho, whatever that is, in a wrestling ring.
Right.
Same with Shawn Michaels. He is most interesting when he is in a wrestling ring, whereas The Rock can kind of do other things and still be charismatic and interesting.
Definitely. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up our big-time WrestleMania 30 preview podcast. If you want to leave your thoughts and predictions and stuff, go to pwponderings.com, find the post, and leave them in the comment section, or tweet at us. You can follow all of us on Twitter. I'm at KFord13, and the others will tell you their Twitter handles and their plugs. So, Justin, go ahead.
Well, I'm Justin J. Houston, and I'm at Twitter, and it's where I put all my thoughts, and I do a column called Rub Raw, and I do a Raw recap, and it goes up, like, late Monday, so you might be able to catch it early Tuesday, and it's going to have, like, a WrestleMania rundown. It's going to be really good. Matt?
Wait, you do another podcast, don't you, Justin?
Huh?
Another podcast.
I do. It's called Flooping the Pig. And
yeah,
I do this one, too.
Yeah.
And then we do one called Viva Chikara.
Yes, we do. But that's not going to be coming out for another long while.
It's worth the wait.
Definitely. I love your enthusiasm. This is great.
Justin sounds like a teenage girl right now.
You should hear how he plugs his stuff on Flooping the Pig. It's the best. But anyways, Matt Waters, what do you have to plug for us?
Hello, I am Matt C. Waters on Twitter. I'm consistently hilarious on there. Nah, I'm okay. I review PWG DVDs for this fine website, and I never, ever compare any of the wrestlers to Dolph Ziggler. I'm also the website's resident Dolph Ziggler hater, so please do direct all of your criticism about that to me. And I do have a weird thing to plug. I will be making my musical debut soon. A friend and I from work are releasing an album called A Gotham City Story, What a Batman is a character featured within this story. This is not a Batman story. So look out for that, maybe in a few months.
All right. Sounds like a thing you're going to be doing.
You did not see that coming.
No, I didn't. I was just like, all right. I don't know what Matt Waters is doing, but okay. Yeah, so this is the first of many. Well, I don't know if it's even the first anymore, but this is one of the many WrestleMania weekend preview podcasts coming out. There's also one out right now. It's a PWP Extra where Chris GST and Des Delgadillo, they talk about the upcoming New Japan Invasion Attack 2014 show that's coming up, as well as the WrestleCon Session 2 show. So you can go listen to those. And there's going to be a Podcast of Honor talking about Ring of Honor shows. And then I believe Jerome and some other people are going to be tackling the WWN Live Experience stuff, including Dragon Gate Evolve and the WWN show. So
that ROH podcast?
No, I don't think you should.
Okay.
You didn't even know who Cedric Alexander was.
I know who he is.
Yeah, right. So for Matt Waters, Justin Houston, I've been Kevin Ford. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy your WrestleMania weekend.